Community Matters is kindly sponsored by Connemara Credit Union Limited, incorporating Clifton, Tullycross, Cashel and Carna branches. Connemara Credit Union is here to serve the people of the Connemara area. Main office, Clifton, 095-211-01. Tullycross branch, 095-439-73. Cashel branch, 095-311-28.
Well, good evening. This is Marion Herriot here with Community Matters on Connemara Community Radio. And we've got a very, very interesting, very full programme lined up for you tonight. So I'm sure there's plenty that will be of interest to anybody about the local news and what's happening and how even international or national affairs are impacting on Connemara. So we're going to go straight to the first interview because, as I say, I've got a very busy programme. And the first interview is with two people. I have Karen Mannion from Forum on the line, and I also have Steve Dolan from Galway Rural Development. And what I'm going to be talking to them about is a new plan that has come from the government. It's a government five-year blueprint called Our Rural Future. Obviously, as of very great importance to us in Connemara, living in the rural area. So, first of all, I just make sure I've got them both there and they can both hear me. So, Karen, are you there?
Hello, Marion. Good evening. How are you doing?
Well, Karen's there and loud and clear. And Steve Dolan.
Hi, Marion. How are you?
That's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Okay. Well, I suppose I'll take both of you, one after the other. So maybe I'll come to you first, Karen, from Forum. What do you think of the plan? I suppose that's the first thing I want to know. You know, what's your initial reaction to it?
Yeah, so, thank you, Marion, for the opportunity to talk about this. And it's great to have Steve on the line as well from Galway Rural Development, both of us representing, you know, the county of Galway. So I suppose my initial reaction to this new policy, Our Rural Future, was positive in that it's actually talking about the rural areas. You know, because for so often in the media, they're talking about more of the urban areas and indeed on the East Coast. So it's great that they're talking about rural areas. So that's the first thing. And then I suppose you get into the devil in the detail. Which we'll talk about further on, I suppose. But I suppose we welcome it. There's some very positive things in it. What it does is it makes sure that no matter what the government department is, that they have to, you know, adhere to this policy and to look at this when they're devising their strategies. Because we predominantly work with the Department of Rural Development and Community Development. So that means that we're kind of working mostly within one department, because a number of our programs are funded under those departments. But now, you know, no matter what department you're talking about, they have to, think about this particular and devise strategies around it. So in general, I suppose we welcome it. But we really have to see more about the devil in the detail. Mm. And of course, it's all over it is the LEADER programme and indeed local development companies. So that's very welcome. And as your listeners, you know, most of your listeners probably know, LEADER is a predominantly EU-funded programme which assists, community groups and to improve the quality of life in rural areas and also to support small businesses.
Okay, well, I'll go to Steve now with a very similar question, Steve. You know, what you think of it, number one, and if there's any particular aspects of it that you think would be particularly advantageous to the area.
Yeah, look, I'd echo a lot of what Karen has said. I think, we're all old enough to remember the National Spatial Strategy 30 more years ago, and obviously decentralisation. So, 0-2, you might say, certainly for Galway and for the west of Ireland. For that, I think the cynicism needs to stop there. I think we have to try. We lose nothing by taking this at face value and doing our best with it. There's a lot of good in it. I mean, the document is, 120, 130 pages. Obviously, people have fallen down on political lines in terms of positivity or negativity, and to touch on some of the negatives, yes, there's a lot there with terminology like aim, develop, utilize, examine, review, encourage, target, like that's all very non-committal. However, Karen is spot on. I mean, this has to be embraced by every aspect of policy when it comes to the government departments and state agencies. And just like we're in some areas of rural Ireland and some sectors of Ireland certainly beginning to feel the pinch in terms of the environmental changes, commitments, taxes and so on, because it's a whole of policy. I think, and I certainly hope we see that with the rural future. So in answer to your second part of the question, I think there's the impact for the west of Ireland probably is what the government keep going on about again and again in the report, which is you know, more of the remote working, more of a proper spatial strategy where one would hope the wealth and the future development, any, you know, IDA development, any investment will be shared better around the country than, as Karen said, the Eastern Seaboard.
Great. We'll actually come back to that that particular issue there, because I think that's an important one, from the information I have about it anyway. But what I am interested in is knowing whether or not when the government or the government body who were putting this together, or the department, were putting this plan together, did they ask for input from organisations such as your own? Maybe Karen, if you come in, want to come in on that one.
Yeah, maybe Steve knows more about this, but not to my knowledge, Steve. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, no, Karen is spot on. I mean, there would only be limited, Marian, direct contact between government and local development companies. Obviously, an awful lot of it is through the departments. They would be providing the government with the figures of what Forum Connemara and GRD would be doing in terms of the different programs we manage. So, to be fair, I think they would have a good bit of the data, and they would, if you've even taken the snippets of the report, they've relied a fair bit on census, a fair bit on you know, what reports are getting from the department, and then they look to you know, carry out in the report how they could maximise or reutilise some of the state agencies, the arms of the state, to make this a reality. But you know, the truth is, Marion, I think it would have benefited from speaking to the legislature and our NGO beforehand.
Oh, so I'm losing you a little bit there, Steve.
Sorry?
I just lost you there for a moment. Sorry, that last line you said.
Yeah, I do think it would have benefited a little bit from engaging with us.
Well, that was my own thought. I think, you know, that unfortunately, you know, a lot of these things are kind of imposed rather than maybe coming from the grassroots. But you seem to be saying at the same time that you're sort of fairly happy with what they have come up with so far anyway. So I just want to go back to that topic that you just touched there briefly on before, Steve, which was, you know, about home working. And going further than that, I mean, at the moment, okay, but a lot of people here always homework. To be honest, an awful lot of people are working from their homes all the time. Small little businesses, maybe one or two people businesses. But what we seem to be looking at here, and what we're certainly, or I think already beginning to see slightly, is people actually moving from other areas because they think, they will have probably a much better quality of life here to bring up their families and so on than in the middle of cities. Is that something to be welcomed?
Yeah, I think so. Look, I lived in Dublin a long time ago. I'm actually married to a dog. And again, you'll probably remember, Marion, like in the 80s, we had some of these resettlement programs where people from cities moved to more rural. So the urban to rural change, and it has generally worked fairly well. I know Mayo is a big county for people from Dublin during the late 80s and early 90s. But I mean, the cultural change is one issue. The impact on housing, property prices, these are all issues. But you know, we're back to broadband, and we're back to you know,
of course, yes,
the devil in the detail. Mm. And funnily enough, Karen and I were chatting before just before we came on air about some of the hopes that are being proposed, and it is a big question that if the broadband strategy is rolled out, and if you know, the best or the worst in terms of terrain in County Galway and around Clifton have good quality broadband, then you would wonder if somebody has a reasonably sized home Will they actually continue going into hubs, or will they have the comfort of, you know, a library and, you know, not having to shower in the morning and not having to dog themselves up? So these are definitely thoughts that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more detail on. I think the government will probably respond with maybe tax breaks or certainly looking at how they encourage behaviour from some companies. But honestly, Marianne, I go back, maybe it's like a broken record, but I think an opportunity was missed with decentralisation. We don't want to go over
which never really happened in the way that it was talked about at the time. I do remember that myself, yeah.
No,
I just go back to Karen for a moment, Steve, if I may, on that question. The reason being that you mentioned that you actually moved from Dublin yourself. Karen, you're born and bred here, as I
right.
know.
Yes.
How do you think, and I'm not thinking so much now, I'm sure that the people coming down are going to find, most of them anyway, will probably love it and will probably find they've got a much better quality of life and so on. How is it going to impact on the native population who are here?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Marion. I suppose, you know, it's all relative in that how many people are we expecting? You know, I mean, Connemara has a very long history of, you know, of people, you know, coming here, living here for maybe some parts of the year, you know, in their holiday houses or renting property or whatever. I mean, I can't imagine that there's going to be this huge deluge of, you know, people from the East Coast or urban areas. Just, you know, I might be naive here, Marion, but I think, of course, we'll get people, and we already have come across and met people, you know, that have taken, you know, moved down or moved making the move. But I really, I suppose, you know, it's yet, you know, we're early days yet, and it'd be interesting to see what does happen. But I see it as very much an opportunity. Like, we'll say with organisations like myself here in Forum Connemara, and I'm sure Steve is the same in Galway Rural Development, and indeed yourselves, Marion, in Connemara Community Radio, we are very much reliant on voluntary board of directors. You know, and if people want to get involved in community development or involved in business, and, you know, they want to get to know people in their area, there's no better way of doing that than actually getting involved in your local community group or charity. So I think that, you know, if the people that are willing to give their voluntary time, some of these people, you know, are probably professionals in certain areas, maybe HR or PR or whatever. And I mean, if they can, you know, integrate into our, you know, as they have done for the last, you know, 40 or whatever years involved in community development, I think that's a very positive, you know, thing for our community sector, because as we all know, you know, it's very, very difficult for volunteers at the moment. You know, most people like to, you know, get, you know, they like to get involved in some type of way. You know, it could be, you know, involved in local football teams or sports teams. It could be involved in the likes of Connemara Community Radio. It could be involved in Christian Arts Festival, for example. You know, and it's a great thing, you know, and that has happened to date. So I see it very much as a positive. And like, if the voluntary sector is struggling here and there's new people coming into the area, then, you know, that's a positive, take the positive on it, you know?
Right. I tell you what now, I have got about 2 minutes left because I have to get up, I will then have to be calling somebody else. So what I'd like you each to do, if you wouldn't mind, maybe I'll come to you first, Steve, because Karen was talking last, for about in about a minute, sort of what would you propose as an organisation that would better improve the lives of people, you know, bearing in mind the recommendations and so on in the plan?
I think the key, there's a key thing that Karen and I had been working on prior to this, and we hope to roll out through the ILDN, which is Smart Villages, and it's a European-wide initiative, and it's all about the circular economy, you know, supporting local, promoting local, keeping people living happy, so that people can live their whole life and develop through their life by living at home. But, you know, Marianne, in the actions to achieve our ambition, as the government calls it, there's a lot there that has great potential for places like Clifton, like the IDA targeting investments, the 19 advanced technology buildings in different locations. There's plenty of room for hope if, as Karen says, we can all work together to bring it together.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Steve. And Karen, your minute now.
Well, I suppose, this policy, you know, we very much welcome it. It's just that maybe the detail, you know, it has a lot of, as Steve said earlier on, kind of aspirational stuff, the right buzzwords and all that. I suppose we very much welcome the leader section of it and very much promoting local development companies. So we want to keep doing what we're doing, Marion, you know, in terms of supporting, you know, our rural community and to the best we possibly can, you know. And we very much as well welcome as well, there was a mention of the islands, you know, of key investment in the islands as well, which would be very, mm-hmm. very beneficial. And you've got the whole work-life balance, you've got the whole, you know, the environmental focus, which of course is very much to the fore now. So as I say, we welcome it, but it's just that, you know, in terms of resources, there probably has to be a little bit more detail there for us. But it, you know, in the greater scheme of things, it's positive, yeah.
Well, that's great to hear. Delighted to hear all that, because it does sound like, you know, things are moving, and you know, I think maybe making the most of the possibilities that broadband and so on offer to us here. So if I may just say thank you very much to both of you, to Steve Dolan from Galway Rural Development and from Karen Mannion from Forum Connemara. Thank you very much for joining us and explaining it to us this evening.
Thanks,
you're welcome,
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. So we'll just go with the
ads. Are you worried that someone you love is in suicidal distress?
When you recognise the signs of suicide, you can help a loved one begin their journey towards hope.
Go to pieda.ie to learn the warning signals and see the simple steps that you can take to help.
No suicide. Know the signs.
Pieda. Ending suicide. Beginning hope.
Are you experiencing memory issues, impaired thinking, emotional changes, tiredness? Are you feeling less efficient than before? Have you had a recent road accident, sporting injury, assault, fall, stroke, brain tumour or hemorrhage? Quest Brain Injury Services can help. Quest Brain Injury Services provides free rehabilitation funded by the HSE. Call us to find out more on 091 77 8850 or visit questbraininjury.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Every week at Kavanagh Supervalue Clifton, we have some fabulous money-saving offers just for you. So why consider shopping anywhere else? Mix and match 3 for 10 euro on selected meats, weekly 49 cent and 79 cent fruit and veg offers in our Supervalue 7, low everyday prices on our award-winning Supervalue range, plus weekly special offers on big brands. Call in store for these offers, plus many, many more. All things considered, that's Supervalue.
Victorian Walled Gardens, a haven of beauty, history and serenity in the heart of Connemara. Our online shop is packed with the Kylemore jams, handmade chocolates, soaps, pottery and other great gifts. See kylemoreabbey.com for our full range of products. Stay safe and stay well from all the team in Kylemore Abbey.
Select Products, Mill Street, Westport. For all your carpentry tools, specialising in American saw blades and a full range of mechanics tools. So call in to Select Products, Mill Street, Westport or phone 098 26771 or 087 27 06002.
Job Spots on Connemara Community Radio.
Kylemore Abbey and Victorian Walled Garden is recruiting an assistant restaurant manager, a trainee chocolatier, and a marketing assistant. For more information, please visit kylemoreabbey.com or email hr@kylemoreabbey.com.
Walsh's Bakery in Clifton have a full-time position available in their bakery. Suitable candidates will be involved in the role of baking and decorating a wide range of confectionery and cake products. For more information, call 095 21283 or email info@walshsbakery.com.
Connemara Sands Beach Hotel and Spa are seeking energetic, enthusiastic people for all positions, including chefs, housekeeping and bar staff for the upcoming season. Anyone looking to join the dynamic team can apply. Part-time or full-time positions available. Please call 095 23030 for more information.
Clifton Station House Hotel now have full-time positions available. A great opportunity to join the management and kitchen team at Clifton Station House Hotel. Now hiring a food and beverage duty manager and commis chef. Apply with the CV to lola.wood@cliftonstationhouse.com.
Job spots on Connemara Community Radio.
Well, welcome back to Community Matters. And I now have on the line a young lady called Rachel Marr. And we're going to be talking about the Galway Community Cafe. Now, I'll be honest with you, when I got the notes for this program, it's the first time I'd heard of the Galway Community Cafe. So I'm complete novice. I have know absolutely nothing. So I'm depending on Rachel to explain what it's all about. So first of all, Rachel, you're very, very welcome to Connemara Community Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
And as I say, this is something I hadn't heard of. Well, when I say that, I do have a little bit of a press release in front of me. So I know a tiny bit about it. But it does sound very interesting. I will tell people that it's taking place, the Galway Community Cafe is in Mr. Waffle, which is opposite the hospital. So I'm not sure a lot of people have probably been in there in the past. But now you've got the Community Cafe there. Tell us what it's about. What is the Community Cafe all about?
So basically what the Community Cafe is an out-of-hours adult mental health service. So it came about from people in the Galway area saying that they wanted some sort of out-of-hour service to support them that wasn't necessarily a clinical service, but it could be somewhere that they could go and, you know, meet and, you know, have a safe space to have a conversation. So it is only a new service. It opened in December, just at the start of December, and we were open meeting people in person for up until kind of January.
And then, of course, there was a lockdown.
We have to move online, but, you know, moving online has brought its own kind of positive side of it. But I suppose in terms of like what the cafe is, it's run by staff who have either experienced themselves of, you know, a mental health journey or mental health experience and struggles and stuff like that, or if they have experience supporting people with their mental health experience and stuff like that. And it's just a safe, neutral space for people to kind of have a chat, whether someone's struggling with something, whether, you know, a lot of people are struggling a bit with isolation at the moment and lack of routine. Even if it's that social outlet to kind of come on and have a chat with us, like we're there for anyone regardless of, you know, where they may feel they're at.
So at the moment, it's all online, but for obvious reasons. But hopefully, not too far in the future, places will be able to open again. And is this going to be available all the time, or is it just on certain days, or how is it going to work?
So the cafe itself runs on an out-of-hours from Thursday evening through to Sunday evening, because that was highlighted from, you know, the Galway Mental Health Forum had discussion on this, and Tom Stewart from Anochella was really, instrumental in the planning of the project. It's been going on for a few years. So it runs from Thursday evening through to Sunday evening from 6:30 to 11 o'clock in the evening, or half 11, shall I say. And people can, at the moment, can have a video call or a phone call with a staff member and stuff like that. When we're able to open in person, people can drop in and meet the staff members and have a conversation there. But actually, one kind of benefit of the lockdown is it's enabled us to get our virtual setup in place, because, there's some people countywide that, you know, can't come into the city centre on an out-of-hours, but we're still going to, even when we reopen and are meeting people face-to-face, we're still going to have that that opportunity for people to ring in and connect with us virtually. So you don't necessarily have to be able to come into the cafe. We're still kind of connecting with people from all over the county.
And tell me, I mean, I understand that the Mr. Waffle premises is being provided for free by the owner of it, which is very nice to yeah. hear. Is the cafe open as you know, when you're open, is Mr. Waffle open as well? Is it sort of together?
Mr. Waffle operates as Mr. Waffle during the day, and then when they close in the evening,
we
transform it into this out of hours.
I didn't realise Mr. Waffle was only a daytime operation, because I've never tried to go there in the evening. That's why. So I see. So they're there during the day, and then when they mm-hmm. close up, that's lovely, actually. And I must say, congratulations to the man, and a lot of gratitude, I'm sure, to Kevin Nugent for giving you that, because that's a great thing to have.
Mm-hmm. Him and the entire Mr. Waffle team have been, you know, so supportive of us, and you know, we're very grateful for them allowing us to use their space and transform it kind of into our space out of hours and stuff like that. So definitely we're very grateful for Kevin and the team and Mr. Waffle.
And tell us, I know they've got, I can see this here, that you can book an appointment by logging on to galwaycommunitycafe.ie. Now, do you have to book an appointment? Or, I mean, once it reopens, can people just drop in?
Before we went virtually, people were having to kind of book in for an appointment for COVID tracing purposes. During this time, we are trying to get it that people can just drop in, because that's ideally what we would want. The only reason we had the appointment was for COVID purposes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense.
So hopefully, you know, when we reopen, we'll have those measures in place that people can just call in, because, you know, people don't always know when they're going to need support. To have to make an appointment is kind of difficult at some points. But I think we're still going to have the opportunity that if someone wants to specifically request the time to come in, that they can do that, but they can also just drop in. And we're definitely trying to figure all that out, that, you know, in whatever format people need, whether they want to arrange a time to come in and talk to a staff member, or whether they just want to drop in when they need, like, you know.
And have you any sort of criteria as to what type of mental health problems? I mean, if somebody had a very serious problem, would they be equally welcome, or would you feel that they perhaps should be going for more specialised care?
So the only kind of, shall I say, restriction we have on people is it is an adult service, so people have to be over 18 to kind of contact and be in, receive support from the service. And the idea with the service is that we could go alongside people that are, you know, they might already be experiencing difficulty and have some sort of other support, but this is an extra support. People don't have to have other support. We're open and willing to kind of engage with anyone at any point of their mental health journey that they're at. And I suppose we can also signpost to services. So maybe, you know, someone might like our support, but then also need signposting to an additional support as well. And we're able to offer that sort of information to people.
Well, it sounds like a great service, I must say. And I'm just wondering, it's just occurring to me. I mean, could you see this expanding into other areas? I'm thinking, you know, well, obviously I'm thinking here because I'm thinking of Clifton because it's our closest mm-hmm. town. You know, other places, say in County Galway or other places altogether, but particularly County Galway. I mean, would you think that it would be something that could be expanded?
I think it's definitely something that could be expanded, because in terms of our team, you know, we are people with lived experience, and that was a key factor. And there's so many people across the county, across the country, that have, you know, lived experience with mental health, and we have a service, or we have a space, thanks to Mr. Waffles. Now, we do have kind of support from the HSE in that, you know, with this sort of stuff, we would need our own kind of support as well, because we're helping other people. But I think if there's that support structure being able to be put in place, and you have people willing and able and a space, you know, this is definitely something that could be and should be expanded across. Because in sharing the vision that was released, it's the new mental health strategy that was released last year, one of the things they'd identified was, you know, community spaces, community cafes, and how they can benefit. People.
But it sounds to me as if it could be a great benefit for somebody, you know, to be able to go and talk to somebody who kind of knows where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it's about, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So would you like to give out the details of how people would contact you for the online service now, or to find out more about the whole thing?
So we have a lot of information up on our website. So it's www.goacommunitycafe.ie. And there you can find out kind of about the service, how it came about, you can book a time slot to talk to us. You can even, you know, there's profiles there of each of the team members. So I'm part of a team, so you can see all of our lovely smiling faces there and kind of see who you'll be talking to. And, you know, has all that information there. We also have Facebook, so it's at Galway Community Cafe on Facebook. We have Twitter, which is at Community Galway, I think. But just search for Galway Community Cafe.
Sure.
And then we have a phone number where people can ring as well. They can ring 087-108-5134.
Right, I love
to be there.
Okay, well, I'm just going to repeat, in case anybody didn't get the, I'm going to repeat the website address, which is galwaycommunitycafe.ie, and the phone number, which is 087-108-5134. So hopefully if anybody didn't get it the first time, they got it the second time.
And all of that information is on the website anyway.
So of course, yes.
You don't remember so
the,
anything.
Yeah, the website's the one to go for.
Yeah.
So Galway Community Cafe, that's the main thing. Well, I think it sounds like a fabulous idea, Rachel. I wish you all the best, very best of success with it. I would love to see it moving out of the just the city and being available, the same sort of thing being available to people in this area as well as anywhere else. It would be terrific. Thank you very, very... Sorry.
In the meantime, people can contact. We have been talking to people from out in the Connemara area as well. So people are welcome to come and contact us and have a call with us. There's no problem on
sure.
that as well.
Even though they mightn't be able to come into the cafe very often or whatever, but still.
We're still available on virtual.
Perfect. Rachel, thank you very, very much for joining us and telling us all about it.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. Now, my next guest is Dr. J.P. Casey from the Clifton Medical Practice, who I actually spoke to yesterday. We pre-recorded the interview with him because he wasn't going to be available this evening. And he was talking about the recent changes in the vaccination rollout plan. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this first, before we actually play you the pre-record, is the fact that, of course, there was a change yesterday. It's changed since I spoke to him, because as you will probably know in the papers this morning were all full of the fact that there's now been a decision that the AstraZeneca vaccination will be given only to over 60s. Now, that was not the case when I spoke to Dr. JP yesterday. So that might make a difference to what you hear. But the rest of what he said is still all very relevant. So we're going to carry on now and we'll play that interview that I recorded with Dr. J.P. Casey yesterday. I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Dr. J.P. Casey from the Clifton Medical Practice to tell us a bit about what's happening nowadays with the vaccine rollout, because, you know, we keep hearing different stories and things keep changing. So, Dr. J.P., you're very welcome to Community Matters and Connemara Community Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. Thank you very much.
Well, it's very good, I think, to keep us and our listeners, obviously, updated on what's happening, because, you know, there are changes to the rollout happening. Some people are happy about it and some are not. So what can you tell us about what's been happening recently?
So since we last spoke, there have been a number of changes, and it just really shows how dynamic this whole vaccination program is. The rollout is changing sometimes on a weekly basis, and they're trying to adapt to both the vaccination availability and the current situations around the vaccinations that are available and licensed in this country. But essentially what has happened over the last 2 weeks is that the government have announced that the under 70s will now be able to receive their vaccination from their general practitioner, which is obviously welcome news. Currently what is happening is that the majority of the under 70s are being invited to mass vaccination clinics in cities to get these vaccines, but it looks likely in the very near future that we'll be able to give our patients who are under 70 years of age a vaccine in their own GP practice.
So is that's just applying only to rural Ireland, or is it, are they going to change the system in the cities as well?
So that is a national policy. So it's not just unique to rural Ireland.
So it's everywhere.
It's going to happen throughout the entire country.
No, well, it certainly is great, because, to be honest, well, especially for us in rural Ireland, that you only have to go to the GP, and I presume it'll be the same as it was for the over 70s. You'll be contacted by your GP and given a date and time to come along for your first one, and then again for the second one, whenever.
Yes, that's correct. So we have been given specific dates over April where the vaccine may be available to us, but we haven't received a date for our practice yet. We're hoping that we'll be in a position to start vaccinating people towards the end of the month. So it looks like it's going to be AstraZeneca vaccine.
All right.
Now, obviously, there are a lot of sort of news stories about this at the moment, so we're still getting clarification from NIAC about AstraZeneca. The reason why it's AstraZeneca vaccine and they're moving away from Pfizer vaccine is twofold. A is the greater availability of the AstraZeneca vaccine that we're getting from Europe, and the second is that it's much more easily transported and stored in a GP practice.
Yes, it doesn't need the very, very low temperatures that the other ones do.
That's correct.
Yeah. Obviously, because it's AstraZeneca and because there are stories in the news, people are going to be saying, well, hold on, maybe I won't have it because I don't want to get blood clots. As a doctor, tell us what's happening.
So, again, this has been kind of an ever-changing sort of news story. So the EMA, this is the European Medicine Agency, which is the regulatory body overseeing the licensing of drugs and vaccines in Europe. And really, the Irish equivalent takes its guidance from the European Medicine Agencies. They, up until recently, have felt, and they still do very strongly feel, that the benefits far outweigh the risks. Mm. They have come out officially and said that there is a very, very rare risk of getting a clot from the vaccine. You're talking about 1 in a million. So there's been up to about 19 to 20 cases reported out of over 20 million doses. So the risk
is very, very small, isn't it?
Extraordinarily small. Mm. And there's been one reported case in this country. It seems to be predominantly in a younger patient, those under 50, and it seems to be predominantly for some reason in women.
Mm.
Again, we're not entirely sure why this is. Some states have moved to a system where they're going to vaccinate only older patients, those over 55. France have moved in that direction, and I believe NIAC are considering this recommendation. Mm. I think this is a recommendation coming from AstraZeneca itself, and hopefully in the near future they'll give us clear guidelines on this, but that is yet to be decided on.
But generally speaking, for the under 60s, which, I mean, when you say sort of the under 70s, it would be sort of what you'll be concentrating on the next time then is the 60s to 70s.
So exactly. So really what we're focusing on is that sort of 60 to 70 age group, maybe 50 to 70 age group. The first in line for the under 70s there's going to be very specific groups who are going to receive the vaccine first. It's not basically everybody under that age will suddenly be entitled to get it. We'll be focusing on our diabetics. We'll be focusing on those who have chronic lung conditions, in particular those who require home oxygen. We'll be looking specifically at those who are getting active cancer treatment, those who are on dialysis, and some patients who may have weight-related issues as well.
Mm. So it's the most vulnerable first, which obviously makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, obviously makes sense. Okay, so you'll be doing those, and you've got to wait until you get the vaccine, and you have no control over that sort of thing. But once you start on those 60, I mean, are we talking sort of a couple of weeks on those, and then are we talking about moving down to the next stage cohort?
Exactly. So we've been instructed that once we have given all those patients our first shot, we can go down to what's known as Group 7. And these will be patients who have chronic illnesses, very much similar to what the flu jab is. So those patients with things like COPD, asthma, chronic heart conditions, chronic kidney conditions. So there's a whole scheduling listed for those groups. Those lists and that scheduling is readily available online at immunisation.ie if your listeners want to look it up. But that next group will potentially be quite a large group. But again, what we're going to try and do is do our best to try and identify those patients and contact them. But you know, if any of your listeners feel that they may be part of that group, feel free to contact our surgery to make sure that they're on the list for,
right.
For their vaccine.
Well, I must say, I'm delighted to hear that it's just being done through GPs, because you know your patients and you know the people and you know their histories and you know who should, you know, the order in which you should be doing them. Whereas to go into a sort of a centre where nobody knows anybody, they obviously don't know the details.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, as a profession, we've been delivering vaccines for decades to our patients, and we do know them, and we do know how to deliver the service. And we are probably in a much better position than the hospitals to identify those patients who need the vaccine. And as I said, you know, we're pretty confident in our systems. We're pretty confident that we'll be able to identify most of our patients, but you know, as with every system, sometimes people can slip through the cracks. So I would encourage people to look at the scheduling and the lists of groups who are going to be vaccinated next online at immunisation.ie, mm-hmm. and B, if you feel you're a part of this group, please make contact with us so that we can make sure that you're on our list and we can invite you for vaccination.
Okay, well, Dr. JP, thank you very, very much for that. It's been very, very helpful, and I'm sure you know people are glad to know that they can contact their doctors and their own doctors if they feel they've perhaps been missed out or left out. That they should do so. So, thanks very much, and hopefully, well, we don't know how long this is going to be going on, but we might be back to you for another update in another few weeks' time. We'll have to see how things go.
Yeah, things are changing rapidly all the time, mm-hmm. I would encourage your listeners just to keep an eye out on the media reports and what's been filtered down from the HSE and the government.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Community Matters, kindly sponsored by Connemara Credit Union Limited.
Right. Well, as I said, that interview with Dr. J.P. Casey was pre-recorded yesterday, which is, and even since then, as he said there towards the end, he mentioned how quickly things were changing. And of course, they've even changed since we did that interview. But I did explain that beforehand. So now we're going to move to another subject. And I think everybody listening is likely to know the St. Vincent de Paul shop in Clifton. It's there on Market Street. And we kind of all know where it is, I think, and so on. But there are problems. And to tell me about them, we've got one of the St. Vincent de Paul volunteers, Sheila Taplin. So Sheila, you're very, very welcome to Connemara Community Radio.
Thank you, Marion. Nice to speak to you.
Now, Sheila, tell us that there's a problem. There is a problem.
There is indeed, Marion. As you said, most people know about our shop in Clifton, and we're delighted with the shop and the position of it, etc. But it is rather a small shop. And what people might not realise that behind the scenes, we do have a much larger premises, which is next to the AIB bank there, big unit, where we do all our sorting and storage is done there. For instance, the clothes bank that's in the Audi car park, when we are fully open, that actually gets emptied 3 times a week. And quite often that can be completely full of bags. So we could be talking about, you know, above 100 black bags every week coming in. So they come in to the sorting area where we have volunteers who are in there. They sort the bags, and all everything that can be sold will be put to one side and is then taken over to the shop when we have space for it. Items that can't be sold don't get thrown away. They go to a recycling company, and we still get money for that. So it's, nothing is wasted. But that big space that we have to vacate it kind of by the end of the month.
Oh, that's not long. The end of this month.
No, it isn't. So we are desperately looking for another place because realistically, we can't really keep the shop going as we'd like to without having this separate space.
Well, I mean, I think we all know the fantastic work that the St. Vincent de Paul do locally and nationally, of course. I'm hoping that we will, that this little shout out, I hope, may help. What sort of size of an area do you need?
As big as possible. as big as we can possibly get. We don't mind the only two requirements really are that the place is dry, because obviously we
very important.
And that we have light.
Right.
We're not bothered about heating. We can put layers of clothes on. We're sort of hardy women as volunteers, so we don't mind about that. And you know, we don't really want something that's far out of Clifton, because it's too much asking volunteers to be constantly moving heavy bags of clothes in and out.
Mm-hmm.
But so the bigger the better. But, you know, we'll look at anything at this stage. So if there's a unit, a warehouse, just something that's sitting empty that people have thought, oh, yeah, we could maybe use that for something, we would be delighted to take a look at it.
Well, I mean, there are some empty places, I know, but whether they would be suitable or not, obviously, that's another story. I thought it was actually the shop itself that was gone. The shop is still going to be there in the same place as ever.
Oh, absolutely. We're very, very happy with that. But it is a very small shop.
It is indeed, yes.
Yeah, if we took in all the bags into the shop that we get donated every week, there would be no room for anything else, just bags.
Mm, and no room for the customers either,
exactly,
which is even worse.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, as you said yourself, what happens is all the money that we raise, both in the shop and even the bags for the recycling. I mean, we just had the recycling man came down. They come down from the north. And they took 100 bags away.
Right, and you get money for that.
We do indeed, and all the money raised there goes to our visitation conference, which is the group. I'm also involved in that as well as the shop. Some of us do both, and that money raised is the money that's used when anybody can ring up our confidential line looking for help. So that money raised could pay for a fill of oil or food parcels or school uniform
that somebody really needs.
Exactly.
Tell me, Sheila, have you noticed on that side of things, during the lockdown and so on, have things got better or have they got worse? Are you getting more calls than you used to?
We had quiet periods during, funnily enough, last summer during the nice weather. And then once the weather got cold, we had an increase in calls for heating.
Right.
And of course, if you've got a family with a lot of children, the children are all at home and the grocery bills go up. So we were getting quite a lot of calls. So there was lots of food parcels.
So there were extra costs involved.
Exactly. Yeah, it was particularly heating costs.
Yes, I can understand that, because before people were going out to work and they perhaps would just have the heating on a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the evening when they come in, and suddenly you've got people in the house all day and you need to keep the place warm.
Exactly. So there was lots of calls for that. Mm. So hence that, you know, when we didn't have the shop, we had to go to Galway for all our help. But now we've become self-sufficient, and we really do want to keep it that way, that we don't have to call on Galway for help. And they can help other areas that don't have shops.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Mm. So anyway, let's go back to the main thrust of it is you need a big place to use as a space unit or warehouse, something like that.
Yes.
Dry and light, that's really all you want. If somebody's got one of those, what do they do? How do they contact you?
They can ring me directly. I think I did put my name and telephone number. I'm quite happy to give that, because we need to get this sorted urgently.
Okay. Yeah. If you just give your number, that's grand.
It's 086-341-8390.
Okay, now if anybody didn't get that, I'm going to repeat it again. So get your pen out quickly. And the number was 086-341-8390.
That's it,
Mary. And now that's your own number. That's Sheila's number herself.
Yeah.
So that's who you'll be speaking to. Well, I sincerely hope that you will get, you know, at least one, if not more, replies.
Yeah.
If you know, I think once people know, the word, you know, the word will get out, because even though not everybody's going to be listening to the programme, obviously, but some will, and they will perhaps pass the word on to somebody else that they might know and so on.
Yes, that's what we're hoping for.
Well, I sincerely hope so.
Could I add one other thing while I'm on here? Could I give out the confidential helpline number, just in case?
Oh, yes, of course, that would be very useful.
If somebody's looking for help, the confidential number is 086 0818-143-8699.
Okay, and once again, I will repeat that again. So if you're ready to take it down, listeners, 0861438699.
Yeah, that's the confidential.
That's the confidential line that if there's somebody wants to ring because they're desperately in need of, well, as you say, maybe a bit of money for heating or whatever it may be.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll be pleased to help people.
Great. Sheila, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And I really do hope that things get sorted out for you because you do such great work there in this Vincent de Paul. So it would be terrible if you weren't able to continue that.
Yeah, well, hopefully the word is out there and somebody will come back to us.
Well, I sincerely hope that will happen.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Okay, we're just going to take a little snatch of music now. This is a little bit of jazz. It's Dave Brubeck, and Take Five. Just a little snatch of Dave Brubeck there, because my next guest is on the line, and it's Carl Richardson, who's the head of communications and public affairs at the Commission for Regulation of Utilities. So first of all, Carl, you're very welcome to Connemara Community Radio.
Good evening, thank you very much for having me on.
So before we go any further, could you tell people what the Commission for Regulation of Utilities is?
Yes, so we're the regulatory body for all energy and water in Ireland. So while we say regulation, we don't set prices for energy anymore. That is something that has changed over the last number of years to encourage more entry and more competition in the energy market. So we would be the economic regulators of Irish water to ensure that they're spending as wisely and as they should be as they set out in their plans. And we'd also be ensuring that, you know, the lights stay on to ensure that ESB Networks and Airgrid, who are the network companies to make sure that the energy network functions as it should, that they're doing what they should be doing, I suppose, from a planning perspective and ensuring that we have security for energy. And obviously, we do obviously as well monitor the energy marketplace in terms of suppliers that, one, that they're treating their customers correctly as they set out in what we have is called the Supplier's Code of Conduct or Supplier's Handbook. So that's ensuring that people are protected, their rights are protected in regards to, I suppose, at the moment, as regards to disconnections and that they're being treated fairly. And once anybody is engaging with the supplier, they cannot be disconnected. And that's something that's been in place even outside of the current pandemic. So we have a range of powers, a range of, areas we work in. But I suppose, you know, in short, it's to make sure the water is flowing and making sure that the lights stay on.
Which is very, very important, of course. I must admit, here in Connemara, we do sometimes get power cuts and things, but we're kind of used to it by now, and they're not as bad as they used to be. But it's obviously a very, very important job, or a very important function that you have, because I suppose without that sort of regulation, the companies might not be doing the job they should be doing, and we would not have the protection that we need.
Yeah, and I think it's we've started. I suppose people would have a low awareness of what we are and what we do, because really we're not direct touch points with consumers and customers. The direct touch points are with the people of the ESPN who are coming to ensure that your meter is read and that the wires are safe and working, and also the suppliers are the customer touch points. So they're obviously direct to customers. We do have a customer care team, which is probably our one point of how we have direct contact with the general public. And that's essentially, so when you come into a dispute with a supplier, whether that's to do with a bill or a connection, if you don't get a satisfactory outcome of a complaint that you've raised with the supplier, we will investigate that. We've handled between 5,000 and 7,000 cases like that during the year. So I suppose that's what one area that people are certainly aware of. And I think what we've started to do in the last number of years is actually try to raise that awareness, not of the CRU, but probably more of the rights that each member of the public has in regards to their suppliers and what levels of service they should expect and how they should be treated as customers. And but then also, very importantly, that we try to I suppose generate an increased competition in the energy marketplace. As I said, we don't regulate prices anymore because the decision was made to allow, by allowing more entrants into the marketplace and allowing the market to decide what the best prices are, which means competition. So they're in competition. There's 14 suppliers. So we try to make sure that people are aware that switching and the benefits of switching across the whole country, and the benefits for prices, the benefits for innovation, the benefits for consumers in regards to customer service they will get by switching, and how that's very important. And we've run campaigns over the last 3 years to try and do that a lot more.
The electricity bills have increased recently, and as far as I'm aware, as far as I understand, pretty much all of them have, regardless of what company it is. And now, where does the Commission for Regulation come in there?
Well,
and do they have to apply? Do they don't have to apply to you before they can do an increase or anything, or do they?
No, not anymore. What they do is they do notify us of their intention to raise prices, because we obviously need to be aware of that to ensure that the tariffs and what they're planning to do are adjusted correctly and applied correctly. But they can set whatever their prices are. And I think everybody's probably felt a pinch somewhere on their electricity or gas bill over the last number of months, and certainly over the last 12 months. And there's a couple of factors in that. And the first one is a thing called the PSO levy. And this is a government service obligation levy. And essentially, this is a tax that is put on all energy bills. So everybody pays an equal amount, no matter, you know, how what your energy usage is. And this is primarily to support renewable energy, to provide support to solar, to wind, and to help us eradicate probably the amount of fossil fuels being used. And this is government policy. Now, the CRU calculates this based on what the government decides. And this year has seen an increase. And it's a funny old, I suppose, that the higher the prices of wholesale gas and how much you're paying and what we're charged for gas coming in here from outside of Ireland, the higher that is, the lower the PSO is. PSO levy. So it's an inverse relationship. So there have been lower prices, and it's actually been higher. But this year there has been an increase. So domestically, on a monthly basis, before last year, before October of last year, we would have paid €2.84. It's moved up to €6.84.
So it is quite, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a significant increase, and we understand that. I think it's based on the level of renewable energy. So right. We're thinking about the future, and government are thinking about the future. We need to support more renewables now and probably carry some of that burden now, so that in the future, when, you know, fossil fuels and gas are possibly more expensive, we now have more reliable energy support.
I think we all want renewables to go more towards the green energy anyway.
Yeah, everybody sees that. So that was calculated. We made a decision based on that. and you would see, and that came in force in October, so it would have been calculated, and basically most people do bi-monthly bills now, and that's how suppliers usually do it. People would have started to see this coming into their bills in probably January, December or January. So people are beginning to see that slight increase there. There's also, look, COVID has obviously brought in, you know, a slight increase in usage.
I don't think
people, you know, we aren't suddenly spending, you know, 20-30% more electricity. We're still quite good in our usage, but that has seen between 6-7 some times of last year. The data we had for last year was 6-7%, or maybe sometimes at 8% at the height of the cold periods when we got into October as well. So that's obviously had an impact as well. But also, there have been price increases. Wholesale and international gas prices have increased. A lot of suppliers, in fairness to the suppliers, they have, recognizing the strains that some people may be under, have not increased their prices and have put a price freeze on, but not all of them.
Right.
So people are beginning to see some of those slight price increases depending what supplier you are on. But the good news in all this, and I've already referenced it, is all of these three factors that are impacting your bills can easily be negated and eradicated and reduced by simply switching supplier. There is really good value out there by switching supplier, and anybody who switches can save between 300-400 euros based on what they are. They're probably using, so that's on average. So,
okay. Carl, I'm awfully sorry. I'm going to have to cut across you there. Unfortunately, the news is on at 8 o'clock here, so I have to vacate the studio for them. But thank you very, very much. It's been extremely interesting to hear. And as I say, I didn't even know what the Commission for Regulation of Utilities did before. It's good to know what you do, and it's good to you're kind of taking care of our interests, which is also a very good thing.
Thanks very much for having
me on. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye-bye now. Now, as I said, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the programme. I'd just like to thank all the guests I had on. I'd also like to thank Breed O'Malley, who did the research for the programme, and Tommy Rowe, who's the technician who's on here this evening with me on the desk. For me, for this week, that's it. I'm not sure who's presenting Community Matters next week, but I'm sure it'll be on next Tuesday. So until then, good night.
Community Matters was kindly sponsored by Connemara Credit Union Limited, incorporating Clifton, Tully Cross, Cashel and Carna branches. Connemara Credit Union is here to serve the people of the Connemara area. Main office, Clifton 095-211-01. Tully Cross branch 095-439-73. Cashel branch 095-311-28.